Week 5. Jenny's story. Monday morning, Jenny does a little better waking up for class. Ready for class before Jenny, Amy asks Jenny, "Did you sleep okay last night?" Jenny replies, "I slept like a baby. And I don't feel like taking a nap in the afternoon anymore." Amy asks, "How do people say, 'I slept like a baby'?" "Babies don't sleep well. They are up every 2 or 3 hours, pooping, peeing, or hungry." Jenny laughs and replies, "You're right. I never thought of it that way before." Checking that she has everything one last time before they head to class, Amy tells Jenny, "I really hope Joe can find my problem." As they head out the door, Jenny reassures Amy, "I'm sure he will." Amy and Jenny meet Ed and Pete and walk to class. On the way, Jenny asks, "Can we like stop by the cafeteria on the way? I want to pick up a bar." Pete replies, "Sure. I might pick one up myself." Arriving at the cafeteria, Jenny and the others in her group all grab a bar. As they are walking out, as fate would have it, the group runs into Rodney Steele. Rodney runs up to Ed and asks, "Do you have a minute?" Stepping up his walking pace, Ed succinctly replies, "No. We're really late for class, Junior." Following Ed and his group, Rodney hastily asks Ed, "Can I call you later?" Leaving Rodney with an irritating and ambiguous answer, Ed replies, "I don't know, Steele. Can you?" Seeing that Ed has absolutely no intention of speaking with him at the moment, Rodney gives up and heads back to the cafeteria. Once they leave the cafeteria, Amy tells Ed, "That was an interesting encounter. Rodney must have a really big secret." Ed replies, "Yeah, seriously." Jenny asks Amy and Ed, "What's all this about a secret?" Ed explains, "Friday night, at our fellowship meeting, when Rodney was badgering us, I told him, 'I know your secret. I was just messing with him.' But he's been in a major league panic ever since." Knowing Rodney for 2 years, Jenny confidently replies, "Yeah. He's got a secret, all right. There's something just not right about that guy." Pete comments, "I can see that. He looked seriously worried back there." Ed replies, "I know. I'll just keep messing with him. I'll see how much he can take." Pete replies, "Apparently, he can't take very much." The friction between Ed and Rodney goes all the way back to when Ed was a freshman. Back then, Ed, a 6-foot, 3-inch athlete in excellent physical condition, was indirectly confronted by Rodney, who is 5 feet, 9 inches tall, and weighed 120 pounds soaking wet. During the first sermonette that he preached to the fellowship group, Rodney addressed the sin of gluttony. During his talk, Rodney not only spoke about excessive consumption of food, but the various ways in which gluttony can be manifested. Rodney referenced Ed, indirectly referring to him as someone in this room. To the surprise of many in the group, Rodney used Ed as an example of someone who consumes way too much food and exercises far beyond what the Lord had intended. Everyone in the fellowship knew exactly to whom Rodney was referring. But the confrontation between Ed and Rodney didn't exactly stop there. That evening, after the meeting, Rodney got sorely ticked off when Ed confronted him. Ed told Rodney, "Nice sermon, Steele. I'm going to ignore the whole thing." Rodney brashly replied, "People like you just don't get it." The short conversation almost ended when Ed told Rodney, "That's okay, Steele. I forgive you." In a tizzy, Rodney replied, "I'm not the one who needs forgiveness here." Ed laughed and told Rodney, "Keep telling yourself that, Steele. See where that gets you." Rodney replied, "Can you please call me Rodney?" Ed replied, "Sure. No problem, Steele. You got it." Since that time, Rodney has tried to be a thorn in Ed's side, albeit very unsuccessfully. Ed, Amy, Pete, and Jenny take a seat at the back of the classroom, not quite making it to class on time. The professor, Dr. Lawrence, tells the group of four latecomers, "We're all honored that you can join us today." Amy cordially replies, "Thank you. We're really glad to be here." Dr. Lawrence smiles and hands their graded tests back to them and whispers, "Good job, guys." Pete, who was worried about whether he studied enough for the test, looks at his grade, which is a 97 out of a possible 100. Ed, Amy, and Jenny likewise received excellent grades in the mid to high A range. Ed tells Pete, "See, bro. You need to work out the day before a test. Forget the last-minute cramming." Amy and Jenny, glad that Ed shared his copies of old tests with them, are also very happy with their grades. Dr. Lawrence then addresses the class, announcing, "Up on the screen you can see the grade distribution for this test. As you can see, the average grade is a 72, and the mean is 64. Please take note of where your grade lands with respect to the standard deviation. If your grade lies in or below the lower second standard deviation, you may want to consider dropping this class. Since the average grade is in the lower C range, I'm going to hold off applying any curve until the next test." Not immediately applying a curve is Dr. Lawrence's way of making her students work harder. As Dr. Lawrence begins her lecture, Jenny, for the first time in her life, does not feel worried or any anxiety about schoolwork. Totally convinced that Joe has discovered her problem and provided a meaningful solution, Jenny sits back and relaxes, actually making sense out of what Dr. Lawrence is teaching today. Later that week, on Wednesday between classes, Amy's path crosses Joe's path. Amy and Joe talk for a while, then Amy gets around to asking Joe, "Have you found my problem yet?" Joe's countenance suddenly drops as he tells Amy, "No. Not yet. I haven't found anything that explains what you're feeling. I've checked everything that's commonly a problem with depression, but, honestly, Amy, this is a really tough one." Suddenly feeling broken inside, Amy tells Joe, "At least you tried. I really appreciate it a whole lot, but I don't want you to spend all your time on me. If you can't find it, that's okay." Joe tells Amy, "I'm not giving up that easily. I'll text you immediately as soon as I know anything." Amy heads to class, and Joe heads home for the day, very motivated to discover whether Amy has a genetic issue. Amy, however, is not very hopeful that Joe will find her problem if, in fact, there even is one. The week goes by rather quickly for everyone, except for Amy. Amy was hoping to hear something from Joe, but no word comes. Amy recalls that Joe said he'll text her immediately, as soon as he knows anything. Not wanting to bother Joe any more about her DNA, Amy refrains from bothering him further. As Friday approaches, Amy has lost all hope that Joe will find anything. Friday evening comes, and Jenny heads back to her dorm to get ready for the weekly interdenominational campus fellowship meeting. Walking into her dorm room, Jenny finds Amy sitting on her bed. Jenny asks Amy, "Are you ready to go?" Amy replies, "I don't really want to go tonight." Jenny asks, "Why not, girl? What's up?" Amy replies, "I just don't want to go. You guys just go without me." Perceiving that Amy is upset about something, Jenny asks, "Are you okay?" In an unconvincing tone, Amy replies, "Yeah. I'm fine." Jenny bluntly asks, "Okay, girl. Out with it. What's wrong?" Amy starts to cry, confessing, "There's something wrong with me. What am I doing here? I don't even belong here. What am I doing here? How did I even get here?" Giving Amy a hug, Jenny whispers to her, "It's going to be okay, girl. Tell me. What's up? What's going on?" Amy cries out, "Joe can't find out what's wrong with me. I don't want to go tonight. And I don't want those idiots taking pictures of me anymore. Please, just go without me. I'll be okay." Jenny tells Amy, "Ed is going to be downstairs any moment now with Pete. What am I going to tell him? Still crying, Amy replies, "Tell him I'm not coming tonight. There's something wrong with me. I don't belong here." Glancing down at her phone, Amy suddenly springs up, rushes out the door, and runs down the hall. Jenny runs after her, but Amy is long gone. Jenny, having no idea why Amy ran out, had no idea that Amy could move that fast. Jenny frantically texts to Ed, "Amy just ran out. Something's wrong." Ed texts back, "Where did she go?" Jenny replies, "I don't know. She didn't say." Jenny, knowing that she is giving the talk to the fellowship group tonight, rushes to get ready. Ed texts to Amy, "Where are you?" Ed receives no answer from Amy and is now very concerned. Arriving at the student center, Amy runs up to the third floor where Joe is waiting for her. All out of breath, Amy finds Joe sitting in a chair outside the meeting room. Amy runs up to Joe, frantically asking, "What's wrong with me? What did you find out?" Joe asks Amy, "Did you run here?" Amy replies, "Yeah. I guess. What's wrong with me? I want to know. Where's Ed?" Seeing that Amy is upset, Joe tells Amy, "Okay. You need to calm down a little. Then, we can go over it." Joe can clearly see that Amy is very upset about something. While Amy is attempting to calm down, Ed is frantically searching for her around the dorms. Taking two different paths, Pete and Jenny head to the meeting, looking for Amy on the way. All agree to text the others as soon as they find Amy. Pete and Jenny arrive at the student center nearly simultaneously. After checking the lower two floors, Pete and Jenny head up to the third floor, where they see Amy sitting with Joe, as Joe is trying to calm Amy down. Pete texts to Ed, "Found her. Third floor, student center." Ed texts back, "On my way." Jenny runs up to Amy and asks, "What's up, girl? Are you okay?" Through her tears, Amy replies, "Joe found out what's wrong with me." Jenny asks, "What's wrong? What is it?" Amy replies, "I don't know." Joe informs Jenny, "I haven't explained it to her yet." Amy again asks, "Where's Ed?" Pete replies, "He's on his way." Jenny gives Amy a hug and tells her, "You got to calm down, girl." Amy replies, "Yeah. Calm down. That's a good idea." When Ed arrives, Amy is finally calmed down. Ed runs up, giving Amy a big hug. Amy whispers to Ed, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Joe texted me and said he found my problem. So, I just ran here as fast as I could. I just had to know." Ed replies, "I'm so glad you're okay. We were all very worried about you." Now calm down, Amy asks Joe, "Okay, so what's wrong with me? What did you find out?" Joe asks, "Are you up to hearing it now? Or do you want to wait until after the meeting?" Amy tells Ed, "Jenny, and Pete, you guys can go to the meeting. I want to hear this now." Ed tells Amy, "If you want, I'll listen with you." Amy replies, "Okay." Pete and Jenny head to the meeting only because Jenny is giving tonight's talk. Now relatively calmed down, Amy asks Joe, "So, what did you find out?" Joe explains, "It took me a really long time to find this one. I went down a rabbit hole all the way to China and back to find it. You have something called sepiapterin reductase deficiency. It's very rare." Somewhat overwhelmed, Amy asks, "So, what does this mean? What do I do about it?" Joe explains, "Sepiapterin reductase catalyzes the production of something called tetrahydrobiopterin, or BH4 for short. Tetrahydrobiopterin is needed for your body to create dopamine and serotonin." Joe then hands Amy a drawing and tells her, "Here, I drew it out for you." After re-explaining everything to Amy using the diagram, Joe continues, "With the genetic anomaly that you inherited, you have very low levels of dopamine, and virtually no serotonin. Dopamine and serotonin are your feel-good neurotransmitters, so it's no secret why people in your family are depressed. Wanting to be sure, Amy asks, "So, this is how almost everyone in my family was so depressed?" Joe replies, "It is. For sure, it is. Nothing else in your genetic profile would even come close to explaining it otherwise." Amy asks, "Can it be fixed?" Joe explains, "Yes. And it's actually quite simple. All you have to do is take 5-hydroxytryptophan and an herb called Mucuna pruriens. But you have to be careful. You've never had much dopamine and serotonin in your brain before. You might end up getting too happy." Amy asks, "So, where do I get this stuff?" Joe replies, "The vitamin store near the mall carries it. But get the Mucuna pruriens in liquid form to begin with, so you can find your right dose. Just mix it in with tea or something." Joe hands Amy a piece of paper and tells her, "Here, I wrote it down for you. Take this down to the vitamin store and they'll get it for you." Amy breathes a sigh of relief, saying, "So, there really is something wrong with me. I knew it. I'm not like everyone else." Joe reassures Amy, "God allowed you to be this way for a reason. You may not find out the reason for many years, like I did." Amy asks Joe, "So, I can be normal, like everyone else?" Joe pauses for a moment, carefully thinking how to word his answer. Joe then replies, "You can be the best Amy Amherst that God designed. But, trust me. You don't want to be like everyone else. Being normal does not necessarily equate to joy or happiness." Amy replies, "I'll settle for that." Joe tells Amy, "I'm going to guess that, since you have a really dark tan, you lie out in the sun a lot." Amy replies, "Every chance I get." Joe explains, "Vitamin D increases the production of dopamine, and sunlight releases serotonin. So, what little serotonin and dopamine your body does make is enhanced slightly by sunlight. And smoking releases dopamine, so it wouldn't surprise me if you quit after taking the 5-hydroxytryptophan and Mucuna pruriens." Amy confesses, "The only time I even feel halfway good is when I'm out in the sun. I really hate winter." Joe tells Amy, "If I'm correct, this will be your best winter ever." Joe then reveals to Amy, "In your favor, I also found that the expression of your MAOA and MAOB enzymes are a lot less than normal. That will cause you to have slightly higher activity of dopamine and serotonin than you would otherwise have. God spared you from having a more severe form of sepiapterin reductase deficiency." Amy asks, "So, there are people out there with this that are a lot worse than me?" Joe confidently replies, "Yes. But, remember, what you have is very, very rare." Joe further explains, "Let me tell you how I thought to look for the problem with tetrahydrobiopterin. You told me that antidepressants didn't work for your father or your sister. The reason antidepressants didn't work for them is because they likely have very low levels of serotonin and dopamine as well. Most of the common antidepressants on the market are termed reuptake inhibitors or monoamine oxidase inhibitors. The problem is that, if there are no neurotransmitters to reuptake, the medication can't possibly do its job. And you can inhibit the monoamine oxidase enzyme all you want until Jesus returns, but if there are no neurotransmitters in the junction, the monoamine oxidase inhibitor is not going to do a thing. Are you following me?" Amy replies, "Yeah." Joe then informs Amy, "If you took antidepressants, they aren't going to work for you either. That, I can absolutely guarantee." Hearing the band starting to play their first number, Amy says to Joe and Ed, "Well, we'd better get inside. It sounds like they are starting. I don't want you guys to miss the meeting." Ed asks Amy, "Are you sure you want to go tonight?" Amy replies, "Yeah. Jenny's speaking. I don't want to miss it. And I'm going to stand in the back of the room and watch what normal is like." Amy then asks Ed, Can you take me to the vitamin store tomorrow? Please? Ed, who takes a lot of vitamins himself, replies, sure. They open at 10 o'clock. We can go right after we get out of the gym. Amy replies, thank you. Then, tomorrow I'll be on my way to being normal. Amy suddenly feels a lot better knowing that normal is on the horizon. As they are walking into the meeting, Joe tells Amy, we can talk about this more later. There's a few other things you should know about. Amy gives Joe a hug and tells him, thank you so much, Joe. I don't know how to thank you for all that you do. Joe replies, you don't have to do anything for me. But if you really want to do something, a slice of pizza would be at the top of my list. Amy tells Joe, you got it. Amy, Ed, and Joe walk into the meeting, quickly running into Rodney and Jenny, who seem to be in the middle of a slightly heated discussion. Rodney continues to insist, I want to know what you're going to be talking about before you get up on stage tonight. Jenny keeps telling Rodney, it's a surprise. And I'm not going to tell you. Seeing Jenny being confronted by Rodney, Amy walks over, takes Jenny by the arm, and walks her out of the room away from the confrontation, telling her, I got some news, girl. I got to tell you. Rodney, flat out of luck in finding out what Jenny will speak about tonight, walks up to the front of the room and joins in with the singing. Outside the meeting room in the public area, Amy tells Jenny, I'm so sorry about before. Joe found out what's wrong with me, so I ran here as fast as I could. Jenny exclaims, that's great. I am so happy for you. What did he find out? Amy tells Jenny, I'll tell you about it later. But what's up with Rodney? Jenny explains, he like wants to know what I'm going to talk about tonight. And I don't want to tell him. He like keeps insisting that I let him know. Amy tells Jenny, he's afraid that you're going to spill his little secret. Jenny exclaims, you're right, girl. I never thought about that. Hearing the music stop, Jenny tells Amy, I got to go inside. I'm on pronto. Amy and Jenny walk back into the room, hearing Rodney announcing, it looks like our speaker for this evening, Jenny, has left the meeting. So, I guess I'll be giving the talk today. From the back of the room, Jenny yells out, I'm here. Jenny briskly walks up to the front of the room as her audience claps. Jenny announces, thank you, Rodney. You can have a seat now. The audience laughs at Jenny's candid remark, forcing Rodney to take a seat in his special chair against the side wall. Jenny begins her talk by holding up a 24-by-36-inch framed poster of the infamous picture of her drinking a glass of wine that was taken by Dana at the beginning of the semester. Jenny holds the poster high in the air so everyone can see and tells the group, this is a picture of me drinking a glass of wine. I'm sure many of you recognize this picture. It's been circulated around social media for quite some time now. Jenny places the poster on a chair where everyone can clearly see it during her talk. Adding a notable amount of sarcasm, Jenny continues, some of you were very considerate and compassionate by posting this picture of me all over social media. I really can't thank you enough. Sitting on the side of the room, Rodney looks very worried, wondering where Jenny is going with her talk. Dana, sitting near the front of the room, looks even more worried than Rodney, for it was Dana who took the picture and is responsible for circulating it on social media. Jenny confesses to the group, I have a glass of wine once or twice a week. So what? If I don't have my glass of wine or two each week, I won't sleep well at night. After 3 weeks without a glass of wine, I find myself lying awake all night long and falling asleep in class. The best I could ever hope for is 3 hours of continuous sleep in a day. That doesn't sound too good, does it? Well, trust me. It's not. When I don't sleep, my grades all go down the toilet. How can that be good? Abruptly changing the subject, Amy tells the group, When I was a senior in high school, one night in particular really stands out to me. I remember that night as if it were yesterday. The police came to our door and notified my sister, Amanda, and I that our mom and dad died in a terrible automobile accident. Their car ran off the road and hit a tree. It happened over the Christmas holiday when Amanda was home from college. I remember crying all night long. They think my father fell asleep at the wheel. Now, before some of you start any rumors, there was no alcohol in his bloodstream. And they determined that it wasn't a heart attack or anything like that. And guess what? Just like me, my father never slept well. Who knows? If my father had a glass of wine once or twice a week, maybe he would still be alive today. Everyone in the room is now silent, interested in hearing the rest of Jenny's story. Jenny continues, "My sister, Amanda, is 3 years older than me. She went back to college that January. Where was I going to go? My only sister is going back to college, and both of my parents died. My aunt and uncle live like all the way on the other side of the country. They said they had no room for me in their 8,000 square foot, six-bedroom house. My other uncle was in the military, and still is. So, that obviously wasn't on my list of options. And all my grandparents aren't in very good health. They can barely take care of themselves, so how were they going to take care of me?" Explaining where she landed, Jenny continues, "Lucky for me, my friend's father offered to let me stay with them. That friend is Amy Amherst, who is sitting in the back of the room today. Some of you already met Amy. Amy is a really nice person. A few of you were even so kind as to post pictures online of Amy smoking, just like you posted pictures of me drinking wine." Jenny then sarcastically mentions, "We really can't tell you how much we appreciate it." Dana, quite embarrassed, holds her head in her hands and stares at the floor. Jenny then looks at Rodney and, recalling that Ed suspects that Rodney has a secret, tells the group, "Some people have secrets. At least I didn't keep the fact that I have a glass of wine once or twice a week a secret." Hearing Jenny's reference, Rodney rests his arms on his legs and stares at the floor for a minute or so as the sweat begins to pour from his face. If Rodney had his way, he'd give Jenny the hook right now. But Rodney knows that would never fly. Ed and Pete would make sure of it. Telling the group about her sister, Jenny explains, "Just like me, my sister, Amanda, doesn't sleep well. I called Amanda last week. When we were talking, she told me she hasn't slept in 3 days, and that she can barely function at her job. Amanda told me that, for the last few weeks, she has been barely hanging on. But I had some good news for Amanda." Looking straight on at Dana, Jenny asks, "Can any of you guess what the good news was that I had for Amanda?" During the uncomfortable pause in Jenny's story, Dana, for some reason, appears to be very frightened. Jenny pauses and tells the group, "I can tell you this. I didn't tell Amanda to have a glass of wine. But before I tell you the good news that I had for Amanda, let me first explain something." Before revealing the good news that Jenny gave to Amanda, Jenny explains, "I did one of those genetic tests over the summer. My friend, Joe Sugarman, who is sitting in the back of the room next to Amy, was kind enough to look over my genes for me to see if he can find the reason that I can't sleep. And guess what? Joe found the reason why I can't sleep." Pulling a piece of paper out of her pocket as a reference, Jenny explains, "Joe found out that I have a genetic defect in my glutamate decarboxylase enzyme. The glutamate decarboxylase enzyme converts glutamate to gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA for short. So, I have way too much glutamate, and I don't have very much GABA. Too much glutamate is excitatory, and makes it really hard to sleep. GABA is inhibitory, and helps you relax and sleep." Jenny looks at Joe in the back of the room, and tells Joe, "I hope I pronounced all of that correctly, Joe." Joe tells Jenny, "You did fine. I'll make a biochemist out of you yet. Jenny continues, and that's why I can't sleep well. So, what does having an occasional glass of wine have to do with this? Staring at Rodney, Jenny continues, alcohol, which is a chemical that some of you think is going to send me to hell on the fast track, mimics the action of GABA in the brain. So, that's why having a glass of wine once or twice a week helped me to sleep. Explaining Joe's solution to her problem, Jenny holds up a bottle of pills containing the supplement that Joe recommended and tells the group, based on my genes, Joe recommended that I try this supplement. After taking the supplement, for the first time that I could ever remember, I slept through the entire night. I woke up the next morning and told my roommate, Amy, something like, "So, this is sleep." I never knew. I slept so well that I was even late for class that day. So, I told my sister, Amanda, about the supplement and texted a picture of the bottle to her. Amanda went to a vitamin store where she lives and bought a bottle. I talked to Amanda again this morning. She told me that she hasn't ever slept this well. I've never heard her so happy. In fact, she was so happy, she was crying. Jenny then asks, "So, what does all this have to do with the Bible, God, or anything else?" Well, when I was born, there was no warranty on my body. Pretty much, genetically, I was stuck with what I got. God knows exactly what I was facing for the last 20 or so years. I am just so grateful that God sent Joe into my life to find out why I couldn't sleep. While Jenny is speaking, Dana whispers to Donna, "Jenny is a junior. The semester just started. That means she's only 20 years old. The legal drinking age is 21. Donna whispers back, "I never thought about that. She must have a fake ID. Dana whispers to Donna, "You're right. And she just said she's 20 years old. Donna whispers back, "You're right. Addressing those who are her true friends, Jenny continues, "I would like to thank those of you who put up with me over the last 2 years. You asked me to go out and eat with you, but I was too tired to go. You asked me to study with you, but my brain was so worn out that it wasn't functioning. You asked me if I wanted to go to the football game with you, but I really needed to sleep instead. When we walked from one place on campus to another, I struggled to keep up with you because I was so tired. You called me on the phone, and I didn't answer because I felt like I wasn't all there. And I'm sorry that, when we were talking, I appeared like I wasn't paying attention. The truth is, I tried really hard, but I just couldn't. I did my best. I really did. But this last week has been much better for me. So, I'm sure I can do a little better now." Jenny then concludes, "Thank you all for listening to me this evening. And I'm sorry if I sounded a little scatterbrained. I did the best I can." Everyone in the room, with a few notable exceptions, stands and gives Jenny a standing ovation. As Jenny makes her way to the back of the room where her friends are, she receives a hug from everyone she passes. Arriving at the back of the room, many gather around to give Jenny a hug. Rodney coldly announces to the group, "Okay. Thank you, Jenny. I'm not sure exactly how that fits in with Jesus, but I hope everyone enjoyed that." Ed whispers to Pete, "What? Is Rodney totally inept or something?" Pete replies, yeah. I'd say so." As the praise band takes the stage and begins playing, at the back of the room, the focus still remains on Jenny. The meeting comes to a close. In the back of the room, Amy asks Joe, "You're coming with us to get pizza, right?" Joe replies, "Well, if you insist." "Sure, I'll come along." Joe asks Ed and Pete, "What time are we planning to meet at the gym tomorrow morning?" Ed replies, "How about 9 o'clock? Joe replies, "That sounds good to me. I'm definitely going to be there." Ed reminds Amy, "We can head straight to the vitamin store after we get out of the gym." Amy replies, "Thank you so much. I would really appreciate that. Overhearing the group's plans is Dana, who always manages to show up at the pizzeria to see if Jenny has a glass of wine. Before Ed and his group head to the pizzeria, Dana walks up to Amy and, whispering to her, asks, "Did you delete that pic of me that you took that night?" In a normal tone of voice, Amy asks, "Oh, do you mean the one of you vaping?" Dana whispers, "Yeah. That one." Amy replies, "I haven't gotten around to deleting it yet." Dana firmly tells Amy, "You better delete it, or else." Not in the mood for Dana's drama, Amy nonchalantly replies, "Yeah, whatever. I'll put it on the list." Seeing her group heading out, Amy walks away, leaving Dana in limbo. Walking out of the meeting room together, Ed asks Amy, "Are you all right?" Amy reassures Ed, "Yeah. I'm good. But I can't wait until tomorrow." Ed gives Amy a hug, telling her, "I love you." Shedding tears, Amy hugs Ed tighter, telling him, "I love you."